Our next guest has a problem with models, not the thin girls on the catwalk and in the gossip pages, but the computer models that drive our thinking and our policy making in everything these days, from economics to long-range climate forecasting. Graham Young is founder and editor-in-chief of the online site Online Opinion. It's a very good Australian website devoted to running pieces of opinion. And he also has a blog there. It's attached to it called Ambit Gambit. Graham, welcome to Counterpoint.
G'day, how are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Now, you've written a very interesting piece recently about a possible link between the use of modelling in the areas of finance and global warming. So tell us a bit about this. What's the link between the demise of Lehman Brothers and global warming?
Well, I think the link is the personal computer and the ability to run reasonably sophisticated models to try and predict what's going to happen in a range of different circumstances. And it doesn't just affect people who are buying and selling debt or who are trading the share market. It also affects things like people developing real estate and people doing cash flows in their own businesses. And I think the basic problem is that we put too much faith in models and we're not critical enough of the information that goes into them and also how the information's treated inside them. We've got this desire, you know, like the Monty Python sketch, that machine that goes ping. You know, we want some sort of certainty. We want it to look technologically secure, and models give that to us. But in fact, they're not really giving us any certainty about what's going to happen, and they can actually lead us into making some quite serious errors.
Graham, you've had some experience in business, haven't you? I think in the property sector, and I suppose you've used spreadsheets a bit yourself.
Well, I started in finance back in 1983, and a spreadsheet then was a piece of paper and a pencil. So you're pretty careful what you put into it, because if you wanted to change a parameter or a variable, there was a lot of rubbing out to do. you didn't do too many you didn't do too many cash flows. It was something to be avoided because it was very labour intensive. I had this miraculous little thing called an HP12C that was actually a small programmable computer, but we generally just used that for lease rates and discounted reasonably regular cash flows, and that kept us out of trouble. But not too many years later, people started using spreadsheets to model quite sophisticated developments, and the theory is that the value of a development is the sum of the future cash flows, and there's a lot of room there for making the value of something a lot higher if you can get good cash flows out of it. But in the finance industry, people tend to be pretty hard-headed about these sorts of things, and there's generally, when a valuation's done, yes, there'll be a cash flow using some sort of computerised model, but it'll also be compared by the valuer against things like, well, what are people paying for similar products to this in the market, and what if I bought the block of land and built on it? How much would it cost me? And that generally leads to people avoiding some of the larger mistakes that occur in areas where it's a bit harder to do that sort of triangulation, cross-checking.
This is once you get away from the fairly simple end of the property industry.
No, I mean, I think if you go back to climate models, which is what we're talking about, there's some fairly good, simple models of what happens in the climate that have been reasonably predictive. I mean, if you get a pencil and paper and do a little bit of sophisticated maths involving some differentiation and integration, you can basically come up with about the increase in temperature that we've got for the increase in carbon dioxide. But what the computerised models do and how they end up with these very large increases in temperature is that they factor a whole lot of things that they call forcings in there. And the problem with the forcings that they factor in is that they've really got no idea how a lot of these things operate and whether they're negative or positive in their effects.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I used to have a small business of my own, and there was something called the Excel spreadsheet, and it was amazing how rosy you could make the future look just by changing a few little figures on the left-hand side.
Absolutely. You've got one model for your banker, and you've got one model for your wife, and you've got one model for yourself.
That's right, and I was always being very conservative about everything.
Graham, it's Paul Crummy-Thompson here, g'day. I was very taken by your description of the old days of working with a pen and a pencil and doing your sums, because we constantly read in the newspapers, new modelling shows X, whether it's about climates or whether it's about interest rates or whether it's about this. We just seem to accept that now, don't we? If it's a model, it must be right.
We do, and we've got plenty of examples of the models being wrong. I mean, it's only a few years since Enron went down, and while ultimately Enron went down because there was fraud and they were hiding things using accounting rules from the shareholders. The reason that they had to do that was because of the models that they'd used for pricing electricity had left them short, and they'd gone broke on the basis of the modelling. Yet, you know, at one stage they were one of the most expensive and most valuable companies on the American Stock Exchange, and I think someone wrote a book about them or did a movie called The Smartest Guys in the Room. And, you know, there's a whole finance, since these models have been around, is littered with examples like that. And yet we keep doing it, and no one bothers to look at these things critically or bothers to look at the whole area critically. They just accept what the smart guys with the PhDs tell them. You know, maybe it's a hangover from school when the nerd at the back of the class was the one that always walked off with the trophy.
So what you're saying about Enron, it wasn't just that they were shonks. In fact, that they were wrong.
Well, they were shonks, but they became shonks. Their shonkiness came out because they actually made losses. They didn't go into business intending to rip people off. They went into business intending to make money. And they were doing all the sophisticated sales of electricity contracts because the market had been freed up over there and you were able to do that. And it's the same thing that almost sent California broke. So all these people are using models and they're trying to predict demand and prices, and what they're looking to do is to get a better return for a lower risk. And that's what the models are primarily being used for there. But, you know, they go astray. They go astray frequently because they're so complex that you suspect even the people programming them don't really understand what's going into them.
Graham, there is an argument that we need models to help us understand phenomena that are just incredibly complex. I mean, climate would be one example, but the collateralised debt obligations that were involved with the subprime crisis would be another. I mean, what's your response? Are there other ways of understanding phenomena that complex, or should we just not even make the effort?
Well, I'm not against modelling per se. I think it's a useful exercise, but I think you've got to accept that they're not Delphic oracles, they're speculation. You know, they're what-ifs. And you've got to treat them on that basis. I think you've also got to be a bit careful. There's a tendency that the more sophisticated a model gets, the more difficult it is to understand, and the more there is actually potential for larger error in them. Because if you've got a couple of things wrong in there, and you don't really understand how the algorithms all fit together, things can spin out of control. I think there's also, you know, some systems are so complex that to actually try and understand them by trying to understand the things that happen inside them is probably not possible. You know, you've got chaos theory, which deals with these sorts of things. But, you know, it might not be a sensible thing to do to try and understand the climate by getting inside it, because it may well be too chaotic. So, for example, with climate, perhaps the best way of trying to work out what's happening is to look at fairly simple models and look at situations in the past. You know, and for example, say, well, has a 2-degree rise in temperature ever given rise to a tipping point in the past? If it hasn't, and your model says that it will, then, you know, you ought to prefer the model, the simple one.
And then, as you say in your article, if it doesn't make sense on the back of an envelope, you should be suspicious. Graham, I'm afraid we're out of time. We've got to leave it there, but thanks very much for your time.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks. That was Graham Young, the founder and editor-in-chief of Online Opinion, where he also runs a blog called Ambit Gambit.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.